is holy, but then we keep them in other places to remind us that everything else is holy.
Yes.
And so it changes again too.
It's important, Janet's comment, however, is the sense of earth, sense of place. I don't. I guess we're getting a little bit more sort of ethereal, or sort of our images are sort of high right now, as far as the, you know, banners or standards or arches. I want to make sure that we, you know, preserve the groundedness of you know, the earth beneath our feet.
And the whole purpose of the arches, whatever they're made of, even if they're made of sticks like the arch we had this winter, which was cool.
Very cool.
The whole purpose is to direct us there.
Okay. Give you a feel of crossing into
the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And to the holy ground.
What, this is direction towards Scott. What do you see musically coming out of this discussion or other discussions?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I was just thinking another image, so I just put that out. I was trying to think of the backside of the wilderness. Feels like the tailings, and the logistics of getting up there are what are bugging me, but I was trying to think, you know, there's something about taking off your shoes and the tailings. I mean, I was trying to think of something to do that. But that's.
Scott, what word are you using? Tailings?
Tailings. We have whole mounds of dirt that we're
covered with snow,
out.
Fortunately, right now, that you don't have to notice it.
What is a tailing?
It's the leftover, it used to be a mine.
Waste.
It's all the waste from the mine.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that. I'm sorry.
It's big orange.
Orange?
Yeah, if you're hearing the sound, because it was a copper mine.
Oh.
But
it took the copper out.
It took the copper out, but
most
the tailings are still
it's
orange.
It's
like a pile of dirt pile up there.
Toxic.
It's a
little
toxic.
Toxic dirt.
No, it's
in
not
fact.
Toxic.
Well,
it's
okay.
Toxic to some plants, at least. Or
right,
but
it's
grown. But that kind of connects with Janet's comment about the just wanting more earth energy. I mean, even if, I mean, I don't know, could you find a way to have all the elements in some way, or maybe
you could bring the tailings down,
or maybe just entries, like maybe a circle with a large circle with four arches on each, you know,
mm-hmm.
and one would be fire, and that could be like maybe red and yellow banners of Crispins that just blow in the wind but look like, you know, and then I don't know how you do but you could do something that would represent.
We could do the lanterns for the fire. We could have Kristen's stuff, or a lot, you know, boughs, branches of trees for the earth, wind, fire,
water.
Uh-huh. So trees or some sort with for the earth, or maybe a clay something or other.
No.
Yeah, I'm with
well,
John. I'd like to make it simple and grounded.
Yeah.
Whatever. Another thought that just popped into my head was. I like making use of opportunities that kind of present themselves, and the Narnia playfield is. What's the timeline for that? Is that being constructed this summer?
I think
that,
there's going to be some work on that this summer.
I mean, is it like we couldn't use it then, or is there an opportunity to use it before it's.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We could find out. I was taking with you the backside of the wilderness. You know, you think of somebody's backside.
Right.
And then the tailings are kind of like.
Oh, that's our backside.
You know, and
I mean that would be a journey
and
that people could walk, and you could have a bus up there.
Yeah. How do you see?
Yeah,
people. I mean, I think most people would be able to walk up there, and you have a bus just for those who stretch.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do up there, but it's lovely.
That way you could spread out the arches and have people.
Walking
up through the arches.
I mean, just that whole.
Even if it's just second level, too.
But the third has got that, its own
when we talk about procession.
Yeah, that's a big.
That would be
a
long
way
to walk
third level.
We've done it, I mean, we did it for somebody's
graduation.
Once a week?
And it was very cool, though. The theme was, you know, a bird's eye view of life. If you look down at this tiny little village,
as far as God, you know, appearing at the margins, at the edges, where you'd least expect it, in a space that you might not otherwise consider holy.
And maybe it could be different places, you know? Maybe yeah. we do use Marina Plate Field at the beginning of summer and we go up to Thames once, and most of the time on the green, but the occasional.
It'd be hard for dish team, kitchen team, and all this is thinking.
The other place is the old drain field.
Right. That's a backside.
That's a backside. That's like a kind of like a little amphitheater there. It's got a little slope to it.
Yeah. I think we're like going to have trouble getting people moving
there.
There is.
As far as Nicholas' question about music, what do you all think? I mean, that's kind of what I have to try. Are there images? Are there sounds? Are there?
I just had the recollection of the last talent show when Kelly Shin did her foot dance, the African foot dance or something. Do you remember? Lots of stomping. Mm-hmm. And just that connecting to the earth through the stomp, mm-hmm. and then using your body to make the music, that would be a really cool thing to incorporate some way.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Cut his feet to the ground.
Yeah, it's
pretty. It could be cool to have something in the middle. Everybody.
Yeah, that's where I see the connection to the earth coming in. Is I've been hoping the two things I've thought about, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody, is having a dance that dancers dance, but their dance is done in such a way that either I haven't decided which would come first, but either they are kind of showing some moves that the congregation will use in a later kind of call and response thing where the leader shows the move and then the congregation repeats it in some way, and the dancers have maybe already shown us that, or we do that, the call and response thing first, and then the dancers incorporate that, all that stuff into a full-on dance. But definitely some kind of movement thing, and stomping was certainly a part of it, and maybe that's also a place with the option to take off your shoes as part of that action in that, whatever that litany would be, back and forth, so that your stomping could be barefoot if you were so inclined, whether we're in the VC or outside, we're going to take off our shoes.
I would like that there just could be just stop. That was, you know, 1, 2, 3, holy ground or something. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, that isn't very threatening and kind of fun and get to be noisy. And
maybe some drumming along with the stomping.
Similar.
Some drumming, like heavy drumming.
I certainly want to bring out some of the justice themes in the hymn. And in that just earth, you know. And I'm remembering all the things Dorothy was raising when she was here before, but there was so much in her presentation about, and it, you know, the whole idea too of people being burned up and but not considered burn out, you know.
Mm. Or people burning with passion.
Yeah.
Passion for justice.
All kinds of.
I think one way of getting at that, this is a little known fact in our biblical studies. Jethro, the father-in-law, is mentioned here. He's a fairly significant figure in the future of Israel, because it is Jethro who comes, once Moses has done all this stuff that God sends him to do in Egypt, and the Israelites are out of Egypt and on their way to the promised land,
Moses is burning out because he's in charge and there are thousands of people and everybody is coming to Moses. And Jethro comes to bring Moses' children and wife and everybody, Moses' whole actual personal family entourage, to him and looks at him and says, "This is bad. You can't do this." And it's Jethro who teaches Moses how to share power and how to give authority to others so that there's a whole system of judges, and shows this completely alternative lifestyle, instead of one dominant character in the social structure. Power is now distributed among several people so that no one person carries the weight alone and no one person has all the authority either. And it's a fairly significant, I mean, that was pretty much God's intent, is to get them out of the dominant, you know, one male, one person dominant nader society. And now that Jethro is the one who introduces how to do what God is calling them to do, which is change their whole social structure. So Jethro is one of my heroes. And he just happens to be mentioned. And he just happens to be a priest of a different, he's not a priest of God in Midian. He's of Yahweh. It's a different culture. It's a different God that they follow. But he's mentioned as a priest. So I think that's also fairly interesting. He gets his title included.
The priest of Midian.
Mm-hmm.
The priest.
Yeah.
Not a.
Go back to something that we were talking about in the beginning. Why did Moses hide his face? Or he was afraid to look at God. Why was he afraid?
I have no theory.
That was something that I was looking at, actually. A part of this, this text that seems strange to me is how God identifies. He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And then Moses hides his face. He was afraid to look at God. And I think there's something there, but I don't know what it is.
It's not just culturally respectful to hide your face? In that culture? You're looking at a king? Or
I don't know that it would be considered that, although I could go into a whole feminist thing on this, but everyone else here at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any story about human beings looking upon God and not being frightened?
Moses does eventually. Moses gets up the courage towards the end of this whole trip to look at God, and then his face glows and the people can't stand to look at him without fear.
Yeah, well, that's all kind of scary. That's all that's scary too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and fear does not always mean you're scared. Sometimes it just means trap or reverence.
I wonder what the Hebrew word there is.
Yeah, I don't know. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moses hid his face for he was afraid to look at God. Because I think understanding fear with the multiple meanings is a very English way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't another verse, "No one has seen God"? How does that fit in with this? Does Moses actually see God or some manifestation?
You know what's really funny?
Yeah.
Moses sees the backside of God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So no one's seen the front side and lived.
I'm trying to think, somebody has seen the front side of God and Lib, but I can't think.
God, Moon, Moses?
But essentially, yes.
That's not God the guy here. Don't put a moon in here, thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
That kind of fits with you guys calling that the back lot or something.
The backside?
Backside.
The tailings are a backside. No.
Doesn't that connect with the backside of God?
Yeah.
And the backside of the room.
Looks like a painting in the making.
Oh, that, I just had a horrible image. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or just one really big one.
Well, it's kind of, the tailings are kind of what got it.
No, no. Don't.
Go back to the earlier thing. It's got the balance of the
user. Yeah, yeah, stick to comments. Now you know why you were supposed to be here.
I've been blessed. I've received my gift.
But yeah, that is, Moses does see the backside of God, not the front side. He hides in a crevice until God passes by, and then after God has passed by, he looks up and he sees the backside of God. That's sort of funny.
In all his glory.
Huh?
In all God's glory.
That's right.
This is still a pretty young God, though.
Yeah.
What? This
well, I mean,
so
that's
the
next soul.
No, I don't think so. That is a
that's
theory,
got a lot
though.
Growing up to do.
That is a theory, though, that the Old Testament is actually God getting used to being the God of this people.
Mm-hmm.
That in fact, the infallibility of God is somewhat questionable in that he being male God in this sense, maybe makes some mistakes with the Israelites and then is learning as.
So I said that Jesus.
What?
So then since Jesus has to rectify those earlier mistakes?
It's a theory.
Okay.
If the it seems like for this, going back to the idea of a ritual, if again there's a symbolism in the idea of not being able to look directly at something because it's so holy. So what if as a part of this ritual you had something in the center of your circle that you told people prior to them coming up to the ground that they were, you know, like to represent the awe, because the fear is really like awe, that we're going to sort of symbolize that by not actually looking at this thing, whatever it is, or maybe it's something burning, I don't know, like something, like a fire, like a campfire.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to actually look directly at that, and that's kind of connected to the idea that you can't look directly at the face of God. And so we're sort of enacting that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like something that, or does that trigger something else for anybody that might be better?
Actually, it triggers for me, and this is the again, coming from the goddess side of it, part of the battle between the male god and the female divine. The female divine lived in all of this earthy stuff, and the ethereal stuff, and under the ground, and everywhere. And the job of the priests, of the god who was coming in to take over, was to get rid of that thought, and so this male god transcended all of this. So you couldn't see, you and I, Kristen, were just talking about this, you can't see God in earthly things because they're imperfect, and God is perfect, and God is above and beyond all those things. And so to not, you know, you see how that would negate that feminine goddess thing, that if she's in everything, then everything is holy, and we treat everything as holy, carefully and well and with good stewardship, respecting each element for what it is. And then God, this other God comes along that's like out there in the heavens somewhere, separate from it all, that you can't ever see. And so there's a part of me that's just like, ugh. But if Moses is told that he is standing on holy ground, then there's a tension in this text that you can't see. You can't look at God, but God is somehow in this bush and in the fire and in the ground and in all these things that we can see, and is not this terrible something else that the priests at that time were really trying to say God is. They couldn't get away from the fact that God is in the earth and the bush and the fire and all this elemental stuff. So I don't know what that leaves me with, but it leaves me really wanting to focus on seeing God in the blades of grass and in the dirt and in the trees and in the fire and in the sky.
And in bread?
I think what that raises for me is the idea that God is in all creation. We still, God or Goddess, are not able to actually see the force of God.
Right.
God, the way I look at it is that God uses creation as a body or something, but it also makes me think of settling the porch. You know, when someone's welding, you know you're not supposed to look at that because your eyes are going to hurt or you're going to wreck something. But I always want to look at it anyway. And I always do, just like, you know, I kind of just glance at it.
Yeah.
But I know it's really bad for me. And I do feel the same way about
the setting sun.
Yeah,
my parents always told us not to look at
that. The sacred, that it's so, so potent and so awesome that a veil would be appropriate.
It was like the sun rising the other day.
Wednesday.
That when it was just on the ridge, you could look at it, but then when it was full blown, you couldn't. And I think you pointed out, you know, we could look at the sparkles in the snow, the reflections of the snow, and you can see the effects of it, but you couldn't.
Mm-hmm. And that's the idea between about that's in this incarnate Jesus is. Then you can look and not be dazzled or blinded. Representing how all of creation is there's the God Goddess who is the totality of all being, and then there are the parts within that are the life cycle that live and die and are reborn and live and die and are reborn, that go through this cyclical. So there's like the big thing and then there's the individual pieces of the small thing, and God is visible in but you can't see the whole of God in those individual, but they still are a part of the whole.
And a lot of this sounds just onto me that a lot of this sounds like how Plato describes freedom and governance. The people are stuck in a cave and there's light streaming through the cave, but they can't look at the light, so they look at
the
shadows that the light casts on the wall that they can look at. And then when they eventually get enough courage to turn around, they're blinded and then they see.
I think this has a lot of connection with 1 Corinthians 13. Well, you were going to say something.
What? Do you want to say your
question?
That was it. Are you going to read it
to
us?
I was going to say, yeah, you probably should read it.
Sure.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Which verse?
After the love, 13, 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Mm-hmm. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What you were saying, Emily, brought up the thought of prisms for me, and how prisms by themselves, like, you know, don't look at them, they'll hurt your eyes, but then they shine this beauty onto the ground, which is holy, and so incorporating that some way, and don't step on them, because that's just fun, you know, dance around the prism.
Disco ball.
Oh, great disco
ball. Great disco prism. And it'll turn on the globe and then you stab
while you're doing disco.
I think
God.
Yeah, natural.
Staying alive.
I see one line in in the Exodus.
Next summer's theme.
That I can really see. I just I just see it in the Scott Osick song. I can see it as a line, and it is, indeed, I know the suffering. And I just, I could totally see that in a song that you write.
Yeah.
Just tossing that out there.
I know that verse is about the suffering, the very tangible suffering we hear about that they've gone through, but it just seems like when I hear that verse, that touches the grief in me that we're all carrying, the suffering of being on this earth, this fallen earth, and just bearing what we bear, the burdens we bear, and that sort of goes back to that grief. The ceremony I would mention with the veils was actually a grief ceremony. That was the purpose of it, and I don't know. But when Paul read the Corinthians verse about not seeing, now I don't see, through the mirror, that seems to go back to with eyesight. That it's another use of limited eyesight,
right,
fitting in with that. It just seems like that something somehow that, great to get to somewhere.
Interesting point about that First Corinthians verse. Corinth was known as a famous mirror-making place, so for them that was a very troubling analogy, that to see in a mirror dimly is kind of like, for people who make mirrors, you don't want to hear that. So, it's something I learned in a Bible study that I just never have let go of. But wow, it's been years. It really meant something different to them than it does to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that can.
Well, Paul's talking about maturing, though, right? So, isn't it that for some period of time he couldn't see things clear, dimly, and then.
He's relating it to maturing. He's saying that. Like, when we were a child, we thought like a child, now we're an adult. Now I'm an adult.
Right.
But for us, we're all still like children in that we don't see God's love fully. And then when we come into God's culture, God's kingdom, then we will see clearly.
Uh-huh.
So he himself hasn't seen clearly.
That's what he says.
Right.
Yeah.
Whew. I think it might be time to call it. Do you have one last thought? Okay.
My one last thought was to, just kind of connecting again to that, to create some kind of a sense that there's more than what we can perceive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just was in a really good discussion on that, on the importance of metaphor. And image is metaphor, but also language is metaphor. There's a theologian ethicist that says that metaphor and image are the language of theology, because there's you're talking about what you know to describe what you can't know, and it's different from analogy, but it has space in there to talk about the untalkable.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the whole thing of holy ground.
Yeah.
You know, that there's more there than what we can perceive.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. I think that would be an important theme to explore in the Vespers.
And one way to do that is actually to see what we can see. Like, dig out a section of the earth, bring it up, and just look at that strata. And what is surviving there? I mean, that's hard and complicated, but I think
we should just get out some core samples.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
We should have
that. That could be a course, one of the sessions.
Yeah.
I think that there is a lot in the passages about sight,
mm-hmm.
but I think the pivotal moment, which is the theme, take off your shoes, is getting away from sight into the other tactile experience.
Yeah.
And so I guess I just wanted to note that in our conversation, the longer we talk, the more sight-oriented we become. And that's what God is calling Moses away from. He's calling him to a different experience of taking off the feet, to recognize that there's more.
I would propose that all the senses are involved. And, you know, maybe we talk about sight because a lot of us are oriented towards sight. Well, you know, what would be the taste, you know? What's the taste of the holy?
Bread.
That's just an unanswerable. I mean, maybe you have an answer, and yours is different from someone else's. But I beg to differ just in that I think it calls all our senses.
I think that's what you were saying.
Well, I think what I was trying to say is that it, not that don't look, don't see, mm-hmm. but that
don't limit yourself, don't stay
focused in one area of perception that you aren't open to stopping and trying something else and having then the experience amplified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are so limited by what we see. We make so many assumptions about what our eyes tell us. It's not a full experience unless we know in other ways as well.
Is
not that seeing is a negative.
Right.
There's a Southeast Asian culture, and I can't remember what it is, but they prefer hearing to sight because sight is delayed and therefore false, while something tactile is immediate and more real, because you can actually
be interesting to talk to somebody who's blind. Mm-hmm. Or do something with Braille.
Well, that was something we kind of had to deal with last year, is people who are hearing impaired or people who are visually impaired. And so maybe a service that really does talk about using all of the senses, leaving no one out, would be kind of the
taste impaired.
All Minnesotans are taste impaired.
What's that?
I said all Minnesotans are taste
impaired. Oh. Well, thank you. Oh, did you? Yeah. Thanks, all. And if you wouldn't mind, the Bibles go back out on the rack out there.
Oh, two, or?
Yeah, if you
want to
take it, thanks.
For a while.
Hey.
Oh.
I made it.
Oh,
I was stretched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I
remade her. I didn't see that, Brett. So
I saw it.
You made
her. I incorporated her into the rest of the dress.
Nice to meet you all.
It was
coming.
It was.